On Tech News Today, the FCC chairman is getting a major pushback on his proposal to kill net neutrality. Netflix is going to release one of the best TV shows ever in 4K. Plus, we have a ton of new mobile apps to tell you about. All that and more coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, May 8th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin, and Jason Howell has the day off. Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists, and we got a lot of them today. Our guest co-anchor today is Don Reisinger, a technology journalist who writes for CNET, eWeek, Slash Gear, and other major publications. Welcome, Don.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Today is Coconut Cream Pie Day. And the reason
that sounds incredible.
Isn't it? Yes. And especially for us Gilligan's Island fans, which, of course, was the only dessert on that show. I've learned about it from my wife, who is, in fact, going to be making one. So you can all be jealous of me today.
All right. Maybe I should call my wife and ask her if she can do that for me.
You should. It's definitely
chances,
worthwhile.
I don't know.
Well, let me know how that turns out for you. In the meantime,
yeah, I'm sure it's going to work out.
Why don't we get into the news? We have a lot of news and we have a lot of interview guests. So the first story today is that former lobbyist for the cable and wireless industry, who happens to be the current FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, is getting pushback on his proposed rules for net neutrality. Internet companies, more than 100 of them, signed a letter to the FCC yesterday saying they're alarmed by the rules. And two FCC commissioners have publicly expressed concerns as well. They're Democrats, just like Wheeler, so he's got his work cut out for him there. And a standing protest is growing outside the FCC headquarters in Washington. It looks like there's a new iPhone on sale there, but no, they're protesting the FCC. Now, if reports are accurate, Wheeler's proposed rules allow broadband providers to offer, quote, paid prioritization, unquote, which gives those who pay better connections in that last mile service to homes and businesses. The commission has scheduled a vote on the rules 1 week from today on Thursday, May 15th. That may or may not happen. We're going to find out very soon. And with us to discuss this, we have Brian Fung, who's a reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on, as always. We also have Amy Schatz, who's a reporter for Recode, and she wrote about this as well. Welcome, Amy.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
And finally, Katie Bachman, who's a journalist for Adweek, and Katie is joining us by telephone. Welcome, Katie.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. Now, Katie, the FCC Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel, I think is the correct pronunciation, called for next week's FCC vote on the matter to be delayed by a month. First of all, why is she calling for that? I mean, what good would that do? And second of all, how likely is it that the vote will be delayed?
Well, there's two questions there. She looked at the torrent of comments that are coming in, and they're starting, you know, the FCC got like 4,000 phone calls, and they're not used to handling all these consumer calls. They also had to open up a special email box for people to send in comments, and I think they're just getting inundated. I think from Jessica Rosenworcel's perspective, she wants to have a little more time to sort all this out. Now, I don't know if it would do any good if they delayed another month, but I don't know. It seems like there was another statement from Wheeler later after all this came out, and he seems to be digging in. We have to remember that even though they're going to be meeting on this and they're going to kick off a rulemaking proceeding, nothing is certain, right? Things can still change between then and the time that the commission votes on the final rules, sometime maybe by the end of the year. So I don't know if Wheeler is convinced, but Commissioner Rosenworcel certainly took a very, very strong and quite surprising stance. I mean, Wheeler's taking a risk, I think, by putting this up in next week.
But yeah, absolutely. We'll and now, Brian Fung, how do we know what we know, what we think we know? I mean, everybody's talking about these proposed rules. I haven't seen them, and I think I don't think they're quite public yet, right? What is it that we believe is being proposed here, and who knows about this and who doesn't know about it?
That's right. The rules will be unveiled publicly for the first time next week, officially at the FCC's meeting. What we think we know is basically that the FCC is considering a proposal that would allow internet providers to charge web companies for better, smoother access to consumers. And this is set off a lot of people, especially consumer advocates. That's partly what's driving a lot of the concern and the comments to the FCC.
Yeah, you know, Mike, there's something else that we definitely know here, and that is I'm not convinced that the average person knows enough about net neutrality, understands it enough, cares enough we're talking earlier about the risk that Wheeler's taking and these kinds of things. I think it's a calculated risk on his part. He's saying, look, the majority of people out there don't know what this is all about. They don't understand it. They don't get it. They don't care about it. They don't, whatever it might be, even though it will affect them very deeply. So is the onus then on us over the next week, all of us, in the technology community, is the onus on us to bring this to the people, make it exceedingly clear that this could have a profound impact on all of our lives? I think that's a real risk here. It's a real issue. At what point is the average person going to truly understand how big of an issue this is?
And Amy Schatz, can you take that question? And also, can you give a sense of how much all of this opposition will actually affect the outcome here?
Right. I don't think that the average person has ever understood net neutrality. And we've been talking about this for the better part of a decade now. So, right. The fact that, my mom doesn't understand what's going on here, I'm not sure that she's ever going to understand that, or if it really makes a big difference at this point, because we're still talking about draft rules, which frankly no one has seen. I think that, it was very interesting yesterday that so many of the companies came out against this proposal, particularly big name companies like Facebook and Google and Microsoft. And these are companies that spend an enormous amount of money in Washington lobbying. And frankly, their concerns are heard more by Congress and regulatory agencies than the normal person on the street. So, the fact that those companies had a unified stance yesterday about these rules, I thought was extremely significant.
Now, I have three lies that I believe are lies that I'd like to throw out there for the group here. The first lie is that President Obama, when he was running for office, and this isn't a left-right thing. I mean, this is a candidate who was running for office and said that he would take the strongest possible stance in favor of net neutrality. That's lie number one. Number two, he said that he would end the practice of appointing lobbyists to head commissions like this. And number three, Wheeler's not only a lobbyist, he's a super lobbyist. He was inducted into the Wireless Hall of Fame in 2003 for his tireless efforts on behalf of the wireless industry. And he was inducted into the Cable Television Hall of Fame in 2009 for his tireless efforts in favor of the cable television industry. And now he's in charge of the FCC and about to end net neutrality. And his lie is that it will not affect net neutrality. Now, can anyone explain why he is able to look us in the eye and say that this is not a strike against net neutrality? Anyone at all jump in this? I mean,
it's sort of hard to
no way.
It's hard to square that, don't you think? But I mean, look, a lot of politicians say things, and then when they get into office, they discover, hey, it's not as easy as it looks. So that's kind of how I chalk it up. Plus, you're talking concepts. Right? Net neutrality is a concept. It's a wonderful buzzword. But what does it really, really mean? And that was like what Amy was talking about, right? Your mother doesn't really understand it. What exactly is net neutrality? It's a really fabulous buzzword. It's almost as good as open internet.
Yeah.
At what point are we all going to come to the realization that the internet is vital to everything we do? And it doesn't need to be governed in this way. It doesn't need to be a political piece of junk, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
For different groups and different organizations. I mean, to me, it's as vital as every other commodity out there. I mean, we need the internet to be open and free because It helps the economy. It helps us. It helps. I don't know. We can go on and on. We all know that. We all know what it is. But I just feel like there are people that are working in their own individual interest, and they're not looking out for the average person once again. And at what point does that change? And I'm hoping that it will happen soon. But, you know, those buzzwords. Yeah, it's an interesting, it's a great buzzword, but it's an awful buzzword because there's no definition to it. There's no understanding with it. People don't understand net neutrality. And I just it's a sad thing.
I think that people should. And for those who are listening who might not know, and I think most of our audience does know exactly what net neutrality is. We have a very savvy audience. But for those who don't know, we're talking about the last mile between the internet provider and the home. It's called the last mile. Sometimes it's longer than a mile, sometimes it's less. Point is, that last direct connection, if companies can pay to have superior service on that connection, that is not net neutrality. If there's no way to get better service than everybody else, then that is net neutrality, and that's what we're talking about here. Now, today on Tech News Today, we're using an experimental system called the Question Engine developed by PixelCore. And if you'd like to, I don't know, Anthony, if you have that, if you can throw that on the screen. If you're watching the video, you can see the URL here, and we're getting questions of this. I'm not going to read it out, but if you see the video, you can use the question engine. But our top question right now that's been voted up by the people using it this morning is from somebody named The Fixer. And the question is, do politicians like Al Franken, who's doing a campaign to stop the FCC from destroying net neutrality, actually have the will to make that happen? Or is this a lot of political maneuvering? I mean, I see a lot of the opposition here happening within the Democratic Party. Of course, Wheeler is a Democrat appointed by President Obama, who's a Democrat. And now Al Franken is a Democrat strongly appointing it. And of course, these two commissioners who've come out against this publicly are both Democrats. So, Brian Fung, is this a lot of political posturing, or is this a real? Does the opposition to this proposal have any chance of killing it?
Well, I mean, the politics of this are very interesting, not least because one of the things that's at stake here is that. To go back to the Franken example, you know, Franken is one of a number of people who are in Congress who are skeptical of this, proposal. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is kind of a matter for the FCC, and the FCC will decide this one way or the other. And then tackle the Democratic bit, you know, it's important to point out that the party lines, this doesn't really break down along party lines very easily, partly because, you know, some of the top execs of big internet providers, such as Comcast, are actually very closely tied to the Democratic Party. It's one thing to say that this is mainly a Democratic issue or a Republican issue, but, you know,
Brian Fung, we're having trouble with your Skype, and I apologize for that. Let me just throw a question to Amy Schatz. Now, this is also from the Question Engine. The question is, how can people comment? How can people affect the outcome of this or have their voice heard in Congress or by the FCC? Do you know how they can do that, Amy?
Sure. They can send an email on the FCC's website. They've set up a special email address that we're happy to tweet out later. Okay. Also, they can contact their members of Congress and send them letters. Members of Congress tend to pay a lot more attention to people who actually live in their districts. So if you want to send a letter to Al Franken and you don't live in Minnesota, that's probably not going to help you very much, although he's in favor of it anyway. So just send a letter to your member of Congress, or call them, or send an email to the FCC.
Well, thank you for that, Amy. And Amy Schatz, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today.
Thanks.
As you can find Amy Schatz at recode.net and on Twitter at Amy_Schatz. That's S-C-H-A-T-Z. And Brian Fung, I want to thank you for coming on as well.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. Thanks. Brian is at thewashingtonpost.com, and you can find him on Twitter at B_Fung. And finally, Katie Bachman, I want to thank you for calling in today. I appreciate your insights.
Thank you very much.
Katie Bachman is at adweek.com. And on Twitter at Katie on the Hill. Katie is spelled K-A-T-Y. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about a few new apps, all of which are very interesting in different ways. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is hands down, the best place to build a website on the internet, because all aspects of building building your website are taken care of by Squarespace, starting with the design. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. They've recently added a logo creator tool, which enables you to create a professional logo, which you can use on your website, and you can use it elsewhere. You can use it for your whole business, and it's a fantastic tool. I've never seen anything else like it. If you have any questions or need tech support of any kind, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They'll get right back to you with a real answer, not just a link to some kind of knowledge base. I hate that when they do that. And Squarespace will never do that to you. And of course, e-commerce is supported at all subscription plan levels, so you can raise money or you can sell things on the website that you build at squarespace.com. And it's inexpensive. Starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace is also famous for being mobile ready. Your website will render beautifully on a mobile device, and you can also manage it using their Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad. And that's great when you're out and about. You can always manage your website even with a mobile device. So start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and that'll get you a 10% discount. And you also show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, a former Uber engineer has launched a new app to summon a doctor who makes house calls. It's called Pager, and it's available for now only in Manhattan. Catherine Roseman is a tech reporter for The Wall Street Journal. I'm sorry, it's Rossman. Welcome, Catherine.
How are you?
So now, who created this app and why did they create it?
There's three founders, the tech guy being someone who was involved in the early days with Uber's technology, and they created it to, I guess, disrupt healthcare in a way. There's a lot going on in the healthcare sphere with technology trying to change the way things work. And this takes some of the principles that we see with Uber and applies them to the idea of having a doctor make a house call when you don't feel good. They're launching it just in Manhattan at nights and on weekends so that they can gauge demand and probably market and sign up more doctors. But, you know, it's very interesting. And frankly, anything that an Uber engineer gets involved with that sort of connects to the general principles of location-based on-demand service is interesting and is going to get some attention. And we were happy to have the story first.
So how does Pager work exactly? I mean, let's say you're a user and, you're running a temperature and you want a doctor to come check you out. How does that work?
Well, you download the app and, you know, there's whatever sort of sign up process like Uber. You put in your credit card and sort of give them all of your payment information when you sign up so that it works seamlessly when you actually meet with the doctor and money doesn't change hands in that moment. You activate it by just hitting an icon. It gives you a list of doctors in your area who are on duty. And you sort of choose who you'd like to meet with based on you see their credentials, what sort of medicine they practice, are they pediatrics, are they, you know, gastro, whatever. You choose who you want. You select your doctor, and then you're supposed to hear back from that doctor in the next 5 minutes. That doctor has his or her own interface of the app, and they get a message and they can accept or decline the visit. Presumably they're going to mostly accept, but I guess they give them the option to decline if for any reason they feel they can't fulfill their duties. And then the doctor calls you. You have an actual phone call with the doctor where you discuss your symptoms and what's going on. That costs $50. There could be a situation where the doctor says, I don't think I need to see you. I think that you're in good shape, or I'm going to write you a prescription based on that phone conversation. That costs $50. But presumably the doctor is going to say, okay, I think I should come check you out. And you set an appointment with the doctor then in sort of the next, I could be wrong on this, but I think it's in the next hour, couple hours. And like with the Uber app, you can sort of track where the doctor is and when the doctor's en route to you. And then you can communicate with the doctor via text message. However, in compliance with all sorts of HIPAA privacy, despite the fact that the doctor can call you and you can text with the doctor, you don't have the doctor's number. The doctor doesn't have your number, things like that. The doctor shows up at your house, checks you out, you know, decides that you have strep throat or sinus infection, you need an antibiotic, whatever. He calls you in a prescription, or she, and then the payment process, you sort of see how much you owe. It's, I think, $300 is what the visit costs, unless they do something additional, like give you an IV. Open heart surgery, whatever, nose job. And then you sort of, like, accept the price, and the money is transferred without anybody sort of exchanging dollars, and you get emailed to you or sent to you in app, I'm not sure, a insurance ready form that you can submit to your insurance provider should you have one.
That was amazing. Now, you answered every question that I had, and you also answered a lot of questions that I didn't have. So that was an amazing accounting of what this does and how it works.
Well, That's how we roll at the Wall Street Journal.
All right. Well, that's why I always have Wall Street Journal people on. So I want to thank you for coming on, Catherine Rossman. I really appreciate it. This sounds really cool, and I appreciated your article on this. And I don't see a lot of people covering this yet, but I think they will now that yours is out there. So
thanks for having me on to talk about it. I appreciate it.
All right. And thank Joanna Stern for her letting you use her
desk. I will.
All right.
I will. It's expensive real estate. Thanks a lot.
Yes, it is. Thanks again. All right, you can find Catherine Rossman at WSJ.com, of course, and on Twitter at Katie Rossman. That's Rossman. Well, speaking of apps, Adobe launched a free new iPad app called Voice. The app is designed to be an idiot-proof way to make videos with talking voiceovers, you know, sort of like I guess you'd call it a documentary style. With us to explain this all the way from Paris is Stephen Shanklin, who is a senior writer for CNET. Welcome, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Glad as always to have you on. Now, why is Adobe coming out with a free video creation tool for consumers? Are they monetizing this somehow, or are they expecting people to upgrade into their higher priced offerings?
Yeah, so it's a business. Illustrator, lots of high end creative content creation tools, but they don't have a huge presence among, you know, more ordinary people who don't do this 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So they're really trying to reach out to people who work at small businesses or nonprofits or schools, amateurs, not just, you know, trained professionals. So they're trying to tap into a market where they're really they don't have a very strong presence. And also they're trying to make a future for themselves beyond the PC. All their money right now comes from software that runs on a personal computer. This obviously is an iPad app. So they're getting on the post-PC bandwagon. I mean, they've been there for a little while, but this is, I think, the beginning of a more serious effort to have a bigger brand there. This is, you can think of it as a productivity tool, maybe a bit creative, maybe a bit productive, somewhere in between. It's free, but getting to your question about the business, there will be other members of this family that will not be free. So they're going to have some premium stuff, some upsell possibilities maybe. So right now they're trying to get it to spread far and wide so they have a better brand presence here. Later comes the money.
Now, as I understand it, the way it works is you open it up and there are a series of templates that you can choose. One is called Hero's Journey, another is called Promote an Idea. And then people can add clip art and music and graphics. And then they end up with this video that has voiceovers and it's very nicely produced, even though people don't have to have skills for production. What happens to the video after it's created?
Two things. One is it stays on your iPad, so you can show it to somebody if you're, you know, if you're a real estate agent or somebody like that. You can just tote your iPad around and show the video right there.
Well, it sounds really interesting, and I'm going to be trying it out. So Stephen Shanklin, I thank you for coming on. Stephen is at news.cnet.com, and he can also be found on Twitter at STSHANK, ST Shank. So thanks again, Stephen. Sorry about the connection problems, and we'll have you on again very soon, I hope. Now, Don Reisinger, you reported today on CNET that the Breaking Bad series from AMC will be remastered for 4K TVs. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so, you know, Breaking Bad is obviously one of the most popular shows on Netflix.
Highly addictive.
Right, and yeah, and a fantastic show if like you haven't meth. Watched it. Yeah, just like meth. So, you know, the idea here is, you know, Netflix has already said that going forward, their original shows are going to be 4K, shot in 4K, so that way they can, you know, pump out that 4K content. Breaking Bad being one of the more popular, now that's going to be available in June in 4K. You know, it's a neat thing. It's a great thing, but I think I noted in my story, not a lot of Netflix users are actually going to benefit from this until they get 4K displays. So it's great to have it. It's great to see it. I think we're going to see a lot more 4K content coming through Netflix. And then that, of course, brings us back to the net neutrality and bandwidth and whatever else. But, you know, until 4K becomes mainstream, it's not really that beneficial for most people.
Absolutely, and this won't support all 4K TVs to its fullest extent. And after, you know, the fact that it's being remastered for 4K, it probably won't be the full 4K experience that will be made possible someday. But it's good that they're bootstrapping something here to sort of get something going with 4K, because it's really a chicken and egg problem with so many, just like so many other technologies. And so it's good that yeah. they're doing at least something in this area, and hopefully that leads to plenty of 4K offerings, lots yeah. of 4K TVs, and a high quality viewing experience, which I personally am looking forward to.
Hey, Mike, can I go back real quick
Shoot,
to that pager item? I don't see how it's scalable. I don't see how it would possibly work. I think it just doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, unfortunately, I could be wrong, and obviously I've been wrong before, but I just feel like, you know, the doctor drives up in his Mercedes and he goes, gee, this is worse than I thought. I have to go get an IV bag, and I have to go to – I don't think it's scalable. I mean, is he driving along in an ambulance? I don't know what's going on there. I think it's an ambitious idea. It's an interesting idea. I don't know how they're going to get doctors for it. I don't know how doctors are going to play nice within the HIPAA laws. I don't know how doctors are going to interface with insurance companies. How does the information get into your medical records, even if you're not part of the network or in network out? I think there are so many pitfalls to that idea. I don't see it working, but that's just my quick opinion. I just wanted to share that. I didn't want to hold you up earlier, but just real quick, I don't see that as scalable. I think it's a neat idea. I just don't think it would make sense here.
I think you're right about that. If you were talking about doctors, I think that they should extend it to all kinds of people who might, you know, a handyman and plumbers and, you know, anybody who might come to your house for some reason to do right. work for you. I can see that happening.
Sure.
But I agree with you, doctors, that doesn't make sense. Of course, everything in Manhattan, you can get anything delivered in Manhattan, including a doctor. And I don't know where the doctor would park his Mercedes in Manhattan, actually.
Right.
Maybe they,
that's true, too.
Maybe they partner with Uber and he can get a ride. But yeah, I think you make some good points there. Well, we told you Monday about an experimental beta feature in test versions of Google's Chrome browser that hides URLs, showing instead just the root domain of the site. The idea is that if you can just see the root domain, it's clearer to you as a user whether it's a faked or spoofed site or whether it's the real thing. And the purpose of this the feature is mainly security. Well, today a security training company called FishMe found that if a URL is long enough, over 98 characters, the domain won't display at all, none of it. Not the root, not none of it. So, you know, of course, obviously this is far less secure than the current standard of displaying the full URL. I don't know why this particular bug or glitch exists, Don Reisinger, but it's probably something that they could fix if, in fact, they do decide to roll this feature out to the shipping version of Chrome.
Yeah, I imagine they would. You know, security on the internet is such... It's such a major issue right now. I feel like the malicious hackers are so far ahead. I feel like the security companies are so far behind. And I just feel like we're at times throwing things up against the wall and hoping they stick. You know, there's a pain point in terms of user education and knowledge. There's a pain point in terms of, you know, the best and the brightest not really being on the good guy's side, but on the bad guy's side. And I don't know. I guess, you know, with every little advancement that comes along, there's another issue, there's another pitfall, there's another problem that needs to be solved. And I hope that eventually we can get to the point where we're out ahead of these things. But this is just another example. It's another example of the security community not catching up with those malicious hackers. And I always say malicious hackers because we have hackers, we have malicious hackers. And I think it's important to distinguish those two groups because, you know, there are a lot of hackers out there that are doing a lot of great things. So, but it's just something to frustrate me all the more. You know, there's no longer a – I don't know if there ever was, but I think especially now, we cannot go out on the internet, I cannot use mobile devices and expect to be private, to be secure, to have our data be secure. Even if everything we're doing on this side is fine and we send stuff out to a server somewhere, who knows what's going to happen with that server. So I think we need to just be more vigilant ourselves in terms of what we're sharing and at times just expect something to happen. That's really the sad part of this. We need to now expect that something bad is going to happen to us from the security perspective. And I think that's really too bad.
Yep. Well, Don Reisinger, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and sharing your perspectives on all this. I really appreciate it and love to have you back soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I had a great time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. And we want to hear from you and incorporate your comments into the show. Just comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today. You can also send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.